This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. And by Unmanned Systems and Solutions, USAS, a combat veteran-owned company that repairs all types of drones. If you're a consumer who owns a drone, a small business using drones, or a drone manufacturer looking for sophisticated repair, distribution, and warehousing, look into USAS. For more information, visit unmannedsas.com/UAV Digest. You're listening to episode 185 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we?
I'm good. Healthy anyway. You're healthy anyway. But I think that all of our scheduled guests have been coming down with the flu and cold and things like that. So whereas we were going to have a guest this episode, we'll once again have to push it out.
Well, you know, here outside of Philly, we've gone from 75 degrees to 18 in a couple of days and then back up to 60. And it's been nuts. So I can understand why everyone's getting sick. But we are what will happen is we're going to get a string of shows with lots of guests. But we've got to admit they're really good guests.
They are. They absolutely are. Worth waiting for.
Worth waiting for. So we'll go with that. So let's talk about what we're going to do tonight, which is the new DJI Matrice 200 series drones were created for enterprise users. Parrot also sees the future in that market. And RQ-7 Shadow goes on an unexpected cross-country flight. And swarms of drones may someday map oil spills. And with that, I think we probably should get started, Max. Well, our first story this week comes from, it's going to be one of those weeks. I got to get the show notes up and running.
You know, folks, I'll be honest with you. I tend to put the stories in and Max tends to update them. But then he throws me curve loops, like putting more comments in it, like, let's make this the lead story. And it's like, okay, what am I reading? But what we're talking about is a story from Engadget.com. The DJI Matrice 200 UAV line is built for work. Well, DJI is making, what do we call them? Semi-pro or prosumer drones? This is specifically a pro drone.
That's right. And it's a family of drones. They call it a workhorse designed for commercial and industrial applications, enterprise users. So this is the Matrice 200. There are really three different models of it. The baseline M200 comes with one gimbal. The M210 has two downward-facing gimbals, or one top-mounted gimbal. And then the M210 RTK adds real-time kinematic sensors, which allow for really, really ultra-precise positioning. So, yeah, this is definitely a pro model. All three of these models come with some really significant features.
They all have DJI's flight management system, which we know is probably state-of-the-art, a pilot app to control the UAV with a mobile device, which is, you know, that's one of those things, Max. I read this in the article and I thought that's kind of a, if you're a professional and being able to fly the phone from your app seems a bit kind of gadgety more than actually something where it would be professional. I think I would want a little bit more robust than flying it from my iPhone. I don't know. But that's just my humble opinion. Subject tracking, autonomous circling, and active track, which is good because active track means that if you're doing towers, you can set it up for it to go circle the tower and do the inspection all by itself. And its flight sent hub system lets us see the video to a remote sensor in real time, which, again, this is for inspections and environmental things. So these are high-end features. And then you throw this whole UAV with a mobile device thing in. I just don't...
You don't like that. You have a problem with that, huh?
I don't know. Do you disagree? Does it sound kind of odd?
Well, I don't know. You have the option. Sometimes the... I don't know about a phone, maybe, but a tablet, something that's of that size might.
Oh, I guess you're right. I still think of mobile device as my iPhone. I forget that there's a whole class of tablet, you know, that I don't actually use because I have laptops and phones. I don't have the tablet universe yet. So,
also significantly, these incorporate ADS-B receivers, so that built-in comes with it. These have, according to DJI, a 7-kilometer operating range, 38-minute maximum flight time, 2-kilogram maximum payload capacity. And with all the gimbals and mounting locations and so forth, the idea here is that this thing really will accommodate a wide variety of really sophisticated sensors. It's also rated at IP43. IP43 is the ingress protection. Now, that's something that we haven't talked about, David, this IP level. IP43 in the case of these matrices. What this is it's a standard, actually. And the numbers indicate the degree of protection provided against intrusion by solid particles and water. So
it's waterproof, folks. You can go fly it in.
Well, it's not waterproof. Let me give you an idea how this works. So the first digit there is the solid particle protection. And it starts with level 0, which means it has no protection against contact and ingressive objects, all the way up to 6, which is dust tight. So these are somewhere about in the middle at a 4, which means that it's effective against objects greater than a millimeter in size from entering the device. The second digit, liquid ingress protection, that ranges from 0 up to 9, actually 9K. And 0 is no protection. 1 is dripping water, just to give you an idea. 2 is dripping water when tilted at 15 degrees. 3 is spraying water. 4 is splashing of water. 5 is water jets. And that's followed by things like powerful water jets and immersion. Here comes your waterproof features. So with a IP of 43, it's protected against particles greater than a millimeter in size and spraying water. So the idea is that it's got some protection against the elements.
Okay, if we were talking about a watch, it wouldn't be waterproof, it would be water resistant.
Well, and that's why this standard was I think originally established, because of sort of vague terms like water resistant. What does that mean exactly? And this is a way to quantify it. So I think this is really the first time I've encountered this with respect to drones. Now, maybe I just haven't been paying attention. But I think, David, in the future, I'm going to pay a lot more attention to this, because as we talk more and more about drones in real commercial applications, I think this is going to become an important discriminator when you're looking at different drones.
Can you tell which one's the historian and which one's the engineer?
Here we go again.
First it was fuel cells. Now it's the IP indicator. And I saw IP and I thought internet protocol.
Yeah, it's not that. It's not intellectual property.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Intellectual. So, interesting. Well, let's go a little further. This came from our Slack team, Ken. Parrot pursues profits with commercial drones. Reuters has this indicated that Parrot wants to get away, I guess, from the consumer drones and go into the industry or the prosumer drones.
Yeah, they're looking at commercial drones as well. Now, whereas maybe DJI kind of covers the spectrum, there are other companies that look out at the market and say, well, yeah, the consumer market is vast and huge and projected to grow, but you have to compete against DJI and some of the other Chinese manufacturers, and that's tough. So in the case of Parrot, a French company, they're looking to also put their bets on a commercial marketplace for their products. So the CFO of Parrot says, this is a quote, "Professional drones should generate at least 50 to 60% gross margin on the long run, where consumer drones cannot generate more than 35% gross margin." So Parrot's, you know, they're looking to turn it around financially, and so they see this commercial market is offering greater margins and more opportunities for profits.
And we talked about this a couple weeks ago, which was Agrobotics.
Hmm.
I said that right on the first shot. Yay me.
Yay.
Agrobotics and Parrot are working together to build a commercial partnership where they'll build drone-enabled technologies for agriculture. So Agrobotics will build the sensors and for agriculture and work with them to mate them with Parrot's drone hardware. So there's more than one way to stay current in the industry.
Hmm. Yeah, this kind of falls in line with what we've been saying, too. I think that there are some forces here. We talk about consolidation. We've seen cooperation, maybe we can get another C,
commercialization.
There we go. That's the maybe another trend, whereas perhaps initially a lot of drone makers saw this
as an opportunity.
Yeah, whereas they saw this recreational market as maybe the place to start, but maybe where the bets are long-term is more in the commercial world.
And what do you do when you lose your drone?
Yeah, especially if it's a big drone.
Well, yeah, how do you lose a RQ-7B version 2, or otherwise known as the Shadow? This is from Stripes.com, and no, this was not one of their comedy stories. This is actually was real news, and this was sent to us by our friend Tim Trott. The Army Shadow, launched from southern Arizona on January 31st, was found February 9th in Denver, 630 miles away. We had a runaway drone. Luckily, it didn't do anything but crash and 630 miles away. But this is how do you lose a drone? And someone's head's going to roll on this one.
It's kind of embarrassing. I mean, these things are big. These have a 20-foot wingspan. They weigh about 450 pounds. Now, they're supposed to have a 77-mile range, except what that really means is a 77-mile communications range. They actually carry or can carry enough fuel to fly for, I think, around 9 hours or up to 9 hours. But it seems they lost communication with this Shadow pretty quickly after it was launched. And I guess if there was some, you know, return home or some logic for to take over when communications were lost, it seems like it didn't happen here.
I just thought it was the Energizer Bunny. It kept going and kept going and kept going. I'm sure there's going to be more about this story, but it's 77 miles. Okay, this is a medium-sized frontline. The Shadow is not necessarily like a Predator or a Reaper where you're flying them. You know, this is an army drone and it's supposed to be used on the front lines as a forward spotter. 77 miles would be, you know, from the behind the front lines up to the front of the lines. and you're supposed to have a communication link with the ground station, even though it may be flying autonomously. It's supposed to be sending data back about what it's observing at all times. So if that data link broke, you would think that it would have some sort of return to home function. And part of it is the National Weather Service also issued severe winds. It might have gotten blown off course, but something in that aircraft should have forced it to land or whatever after a break in communication. So how it kept going, if it, you know, I don't know. It is kind of frightening that we had a thing that we lost for several days. You know, it was found on February 9th after being flown on January 31st. But what happens if that had drifted into a town and crash landed or such like that? Or it was flying in the national airspace. Now, Arizona and Colorado kind of have some wide open spaces, but Denver is pretty crowded and is one of the busiest airports in the United States for us. So there's going to be some explaining to do for a lot of people, including the manufacturer, because the Q7 should have caught it right away. The other thing about it is it's an RQ, which means it wasn't carrying any weaponry. So that there's another lucky thing to happen. It wasn't like a Predator or Reaper where you're carrying armament. It's strictly reconnaissance. So thus the R. So interesting story. I want to keep an eye on this because I want to see if something actually comes out. Likewise, I kind of want to know if our friends in the National Transportation Safety Board would get involved with drones sort of going, disappearing. Mm. So maybe that person that we know and love so dearly in the National Transportation Safety Board that'll be listening to this might want to give our insights as an inside source to Max and I if there's going to be an investigation or is this strictly the Army. Then we might not ever find out what happened.
Hmm. Yeah, there might be security issues around it, you know, where you wouldn't want to make an investigation public or, you know, something like that. I mean, maybe there was a failure of the system. So maybe it was an unrelated failure to the loss of communication, or maybe it was related. But if it represents a vulnerability, let's say, in the shadow, then you may not really want to make that widely known. So, yeah, I don't know how that works.
Or we could do what we do for everything anymore. We blame it on the Russians.
Putin. All right. No letters, no hate mail.
No, we'll just have fun, a little bit of fun with that. So our next story was from UB, or the University of Buffalo. And this is from buffalo.edu news. The Buffalo School of Engineering and Applied Sciences, have devised a method to quickly map oil spills. So there's a blooper for you. Has devised a method to quickly map oil spills with a swarm of off-the-shelf drones. This is kind of cool. This is our drones for good story, right, Max?
Yes, it is. And I guess that's my second favorite topic, right behind fuel cells, is swarms, drone swarms. I think that they just continue to fascinate me. But this is kind of interesting. The drones, as they're flying around in a group, they record if they're over water or if they're over oil or over an edge of the spill. Now, that's, I guess, not too difficult to do, but these drones are communicating with each other, providing the results to each other so that they don't just each cover the same area. They're kind of acting independently. The idea is that a swarm could be sent out, say, from a ship to survey and map an oil spill, and they could go out there and do their thing, and then as a drone gets low on power, it would return to the ship. another drone would take off to replace it in the swarm, and that replacement drone would know all of the results of all the other drones, so that it could just, you know, integrate itself into the swarm and take up the mapping process. I think that's a really fascinating idea.
Now I understand why you like this story. Not swarms, folks. And how is the requirements done on this, Max? What are the low computational requirements? Are done by what?
Well, they say that, this doesn't take a lot of computational horsepower, and so you could actually use Raspberry Pis to power each of these things and run the software. Another thing, this was really, really interesting, is the issue of collision avoidance. So if you've got a swarm of drones flying around, and obviously part of the logic of the system has to be, how do you keep them from crashing into each other? Well, they looked at some work that came out of the University of Queensland, and there the researchers were looking at parrots. That's right, parrots.
Not the drone, the bird.
The bird, because apparently parrots can fly around in groups and they don't crash into each other. So this research took a look at how do they do that. And I guess what they found is that in a situation, this is like boating, in a situation where I guess two parrots were coming close to each other, they all follow the same rule, which is go to the right. And that's it. It's as simple as that. So in the case of this... Now
my father was a sailor. You mean go to starboard, right? We don't
right,
go.
Right, I know. Yes.
You, of all people, should know that. You own a boat.
So at University at Buffalo, they've kind of taken advantage of this notion of creating just really simple rules that can be used for avoidance in swarms of drones. I think that's great.
And when in doubt, go to the right.
Yeah.
So, Max, we don't have a video of the week, though. We do recommend you look at that DJI link that's going to be in our show notes. There's a video there. It is kind of amazing what the Matrice is, you know. Seeing multiple cameras and multiple sensors on it, it's a video worth watching to see how far we've come from having just a small camera hung on a gimbal to a multiple sensor platform, which is what we've moved to, which is really kind of cool. So we'll use that, and I'll use that as, well, we really don't have a video of the week because our listeners didn't send us one. So if you have a video of the week, send it to feedback@theuavdigest.com, because we want to see what you guys are seeing and we want to be able to share it with everybody else. So there's my speech about reaching out to us and giving us a video of the week. But we have other news. This is really good. Why don't you tell us about our new media partnership, Max?
Sure. This is with the Ascend Conference and Expo. This is coming up July 19th through 21st, 2017. This is in Portland, Oregon. They call this the Essential UAS event for commercial business. Now, Ascend is from the team that's behind the Drone 360 magazine. And the idea here is they're going to focus on the commercial UAS industry with expert speakers and critical analysis. The registration actually just opened up today as we record this. We have an event logo on our webpage at theuavdigest.com. You can click that. That'll take you right over to the event page. They're also on Facebook at...
Facebook.com/...
Ascend_UAS. And same on Twitter at Ascend_UAS. We have something exciting that we can tell you about. Also, we have a $50 discount code that you can use for the event. That's just simply the UAV Digest. So look for where you put in the coupon code when you're registering for the conference. And then finally, if you're traveling to Portland for the event, the organizers are recommending that you book your room as soon as possible to guarantee rates and availability. The conference hotel is the Courtyard by Marriott Portland Downtown Convention Center. So look for that. Try to get into that if you are going to attend.
So definitely, it behooves you to go out to our website and go to the ascendevent.com page. It also helps them to know that we are their partner. So it benefits both of us, and that way we can get more partnerships to bring the information to you guys, because it's all one big reciprocity. There's the word for the day, reciprocity. So I guess with that, Max, we should probably call it a day. What do you think?
We want to thank you for listening. This has been episode 185 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at the UAVDigest.com. Also, just I'll mention that besides show notes for the episode, we also have a page with current unmanned aircraft news you can find there to click on. And we also have a link to a UAV directory that has a lot of resources for unmanned aircraft websites and just a variety of other resources. And of course, this being episode 185, you can find show notes for this episode at the UAVDigest.com/185.
And of course, you can become part of our Slack listener team by sending us an email at feedback@theuavdigest.com. Or if you want to learn more about it, go to theuavdigest.com/team. We have a Facebook page that I'm trying to actively keep new stories on. So that's facebook.com/theuavdigest. Our Twitter feed, which is always hopping, which is @UAVDigest. And again, our email is feedback@theuavdigest.com. And leave us feedback on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store or become a patron of the show at patreon.com/theuavdigest. And of course, Max and I appreciate it. And I will say to everyone out there, you guys have been my respite every week for a lot of turmoil in my life, but I really enjoy doing this, and I thank our listeners for giving me the opportunity and my co-host for letting me skate on some of the things I normally do. But we really enjoy doing this, and this is a highlight of our week. So again, thank you to our listeners. So on that preachy note, I'm going to say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening, and feel better, Drone Mama.
This episode was sponsored in part by Unmanned Systems and Solutions. 30 USAS technicians repair all types of drones in their 120,000-square-foot professional drone repair facility. USAS also offers full-service operations consulting and programs for commercial and government users. Visit unmannedsas.com/UAVDigest to learn more about how to get your drone repaired.